Morning. Today's up in Baba Basra's Kuf Samech Gimel. The Gemara is a continuation of yesterday's daf. Yesterday we talked about how to try to make a contract tamper-proof. The reason why this has been the topic of discussion now for the last 3 days is because the 10th parak, which started 3 days ago, opened up with a distinction between two different types of contracts, two different types of gittin. There's a get pashut and get mekushar. Get pashut, your standard get, which is one-sided. The text is on one side, and then the bottom of the text, you have the signatures of the two witnesses. The get mekushar, on the other hand, is where the text is on one side, the signature is on the other side. An institution made by the chachamim to make a more time-consuming effort in writing a contract in the event that a kohen wants to divorce his wife. So this time-consuming contract will give the kohen time to deliberate and reconsider the divorce that he's going to give his wife. With all that stated, the Gemara now, for the last couple of days, launched into a discussion regarding how to make a contract as tamper-proof as possible. We don't want anyone to be writing corrections, emendations, or anything on any kind of contract. We're not just talking about divorce contracts, obviously. We're talking about all types of contracts. And actually, more specifically, we're really talking about monetary contracts, where a person is now awarding another person a certain amount of property or assets, whatever, and you want to make sure that the contract is going to be authentic. So how do you make it as authentic as possible has been part of our discussion. We learned in yesterday's daf that the on a standard contract, so you have the text of the contract, the ksav, and then below that you have the chasimas ha'edim, you have the signatures of the witnesses. So there can't be a gap between the ksav and the edim for a very simple reason. If there's a gap of space between the two, so then somebody who is interested in tampering with the document, so he's going to insert some extra text into that gap, and that extra text will either award more money or whatever. In other words, you know, you have literally room to play with if you left a two line gap. If you left a one line gap, however, we learned in yesterday's daf, one line is fine, because even if someone were to fill in that one line, we learned in yesterday's daf, ein lameda mishita achrona. We don't learn anything new from a contract because of the last line. That last line is not there to teach us anything, and it's at best what it's supposed to be is a review of every point that was stated. Not every point, but points that were stated earlier in the contract, but there's nothing new to be learned by that last line. And so therefore, if you only leave a one line gap between the ksav and the edim, so then there's nothing that an unscrupulous person would be able to do that would be able to affect or change the contract. In yesterday's daf, the Gemara classically asked its question. All right, so one line gap is fine between the ksav and the edim. A two line gap is no good between the ksav and the edim. What about a line and a half? Your classic question of the Gemara, but the Gemara answered that question yesterday. A line and a half would be fine, because again, you need, in order for the shtar to be subject to tampering, there has to be a full two line gap between the. Between the ksav and the eidim. Ad Khan, that takes us basically as a review up into where we are right now, on the very bottom of Kuf Samach Beis Amud Beis, and the Gemara continues, Ibai Lahu, it's the last line. The Gemara says, question. Shnei Shitim Shamra. Okay, so now we've all concluded that in order for a shtar to be pasul, there has to be a two-line gap between the ksav and the eidim. So now the Gemara wants to know, we're going to even be more specific over here in this question. So Shtei Shitim Shamra, we're on the very top of Kuf Samachim Amun Aleph, Hein Vaviran, Odilma Hein Velo Aviran. So is that the lines with airspace or lines with no airspace? Okay. To explain, as we all know. Okay, when you...
They're not getting any airspace.
So as we all know. So when you write Ksav Ivri, I mean, when I say Ksav Ivri, I mean the Hebrew language, right? There's actually, I really do mean Ksav Ashuris. Just as a point of interest, I don't know if people know this, and we're going to see this in the Gemara Sanhedrin, right? It's coming up, I think the first parak, and if it's not the first parak, it's going to be the second parak. So, but one of those two. We're going to learn together that there were actually two ways to write the Hebrew language. There's Ksav Ashuris and Ksav Ivri. Ksav Ashuris is a block letters that we are used to looking at. Although when you look at Rashi, they're not block letters. Rashi is writing in a different script, but we call it Ksav Rashi. I don't think historically that Rashi actually invented or put the script together. The original publishers of the Gemara, wanting to make a distinction, a differentiation between the text of the Gemara and the commentaries of the Gemara, so they, so to say, outlined basically a new style of writing, which what we refer to as Ksav Rashi. It's Rashi's script. I don't think Rashi was the one who put the script together. Anyway, neither here nor there. Now I'm way off on a tangent. Okay, but to return back to the original tangent, there are two ways to write. There's Ksav Ivri, Ksav Ashuris. So when you and I talk about the Hebrew language, we always look at Ksav Ashuris. Our Sefer Torah written in Ksav Ashuris. The Gemara that we're looking at right now is written in Ksav Ashuris. Ksav Ivri, you and I wouldn't recognize it. Meaning, I have a safe in my house which actually goes through each letter. I'm sure you could look it up. I'm sure it's something you can find. But you and I wouldn't recognize it. We wouldn't know how to read Ksav Ivri. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin is going to discuss. This is now at least a month from now. But we're going to learn this together. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is going to discuss when was Ksav Ivri used, when was Ksav Ashuris used, who made the change, etc. etc. When the original Sefer Torah was given, was it given in Ksav Ivri, Ksav Ashuris? Okay, that's all for later. Anyway, I digressed. Let's go back over here. So, but when you write the Hebrew language, so most of the letters of the Hebrew language fill in the line. Meaning, if we were to have a line of where you were to write, now take us all the way back to the beginning of our elementary school education. So when you're learning to write letters, so you have a line, right? A line above, a line below, and you're going to write. And most letters are going to fill in the line from top to bottom. Just think, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Ches, Tes. Right, even the block letter Tes, right? Yud's not going to go from top to bottom, but Yud'll start at the top. So most letters in the Aleph base are going to just basically cover that line top to bottom. However, as we all know, there are going to be letters that are going to encroach, and they're going to go above the line, and below line. And specifically, we'll talk about these letters right now: the Lamed and the Chaf Sofis. There are others as well, but these are just two, your two prime suspects. Okay, so the Lamed. We know that the head of the Lamed goes above the line. So when the Gemara over here is discussing a line and its airspace, what the Gemara is really saying is, you have to account for the Lamed. The Lamed obviously creates an extra amount of room that's above its space. Also, when you're talking about a letter like the Chaf Sofis, so the Chaf Sofis has its tail going below the line. So the Gemara now is entertaining the following question. We know that a two-line gap between the Ksav and the Edom is no good. But are we basically entertaining that it's just two lines with no space whatsoever? And what about the Chaf and what about the Lamed? I don't know. Or the Gemara is entertaining that no. Maybe the two-line space also has to take into account the fact that there are letters that encroach below and there are letters that encroach above. And then on top of that, you also have to entertain the following. That let's say that I have the lines going one above the other, and the Chaf is going down, and the line immediately below it has the Lamed going right above it. Which now means that not only do I need two lines, and not only do I need one airspace, but I actually need two airspaces between those two lines. So this is now the Gemara's question. That when we're talking about two lines being a posel, do we mean two lines and taking into account the letters that encroach above and encroach below, requiring more line space? That's the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, "Hein va'aviran o dumah hein v'lo aviran." So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Mistabra hein aviran. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, I think it's most logical to argue that it is the lines and the airspace. Isak adach hein v'lo aviran, because if you suggest that it is only the actual lines themselves, but not any room for a lamed or a chaf sofis, shita achas below aviran l'maychazia. So in other words, you can't write. Meaning most sentences are going to include letters that are going to go above and below the line. So therefore, in order to facilitate a line, we mean a line of writing. And generally, a line of writing includes a little space above and a little space below. So, Elo Shmamina, Hein Vaviran Shmamina. So the Gemara says, so I think it goes without saying that when we say two lines, we mean two lines plus the necessary airspace. The Gemara now is going to be very specific. Rabbi Shabtah Amar Mishmet Chizkir, Shnei Shittim Shamruk B'Ksav, Yidei Eidim V'lo K'sav Yidei Sofer. Gemara says now, we're talking about two lines. Now, there is no objective standard for how high a line is. Meaning, really, truth of the matter is that it depends on a person's handwriting. In my experience of teaching, so I've had students who write unbelievably small. I generally find, by the way, the students who write unbelievably small also have unbelievably good handwriting. But in other words, they could write, you know, just in the tiniest amount of space. So, over here, question the Gemara is asking now, and that's not even a question, it's a statement rather, is that when we say lines, we mean based on whose handwriting. On a contract, you're going to have actually multiple people on a contract. You're going to have the sofer writing the ksav. Now, he's a professional. In other words, he's a professional sofer, so his writing is going to be generally smaller, because he knows what he's doing. And also, on the same contract, you're also going to have witnesses signing. Now, witnesses signing, so they're not necessarily scribes, and therefore, generally speaking, their writing is going to be larger. So now the Gemara is entertaining the following discussion. So we're saying that a two-line gap between the Ksav and the Edim are no good. We have already established that in terms of the two lines, they have to be the two lines plus the Aviran, plus the airspace, accounting for letters that go above and below the line. We are now entertaining in the Gemara a question of whose handwriting are we looking at? The sofer's handwriting, which is typically smaller, or the witness's handwriting, which is typically larger. So to that, the Gemara quotes, in the name of Chizkiah, Shnei Shittim Shamar B'Ksav Yidei Edim V'lo K'sav Yidei Sofer. It's going to be based on the signature's handwriting and not the sofer's handwriting. My taima, your question, the Gemara's question, why should that be? Because to call Mazayef Lav Lagabi Safra Azo Mazayef. So the Gemara says, because look, we're obviously worried about tampering. Who do we turn to for tampering? So I'll tell you who the wrong person is to turn to tamper. Well, first I'll tell you, don't tamper. that's the starting point. But if you're going to tamper, so who do you turn to? Don't turn to the sofer. The sofer's not going to do it. He's a professional. You're asking him to basically incriminate himself and to really call into question his entire profession. Meaning, once it is come about that he has tampered with his very own document, no one's going to use him, no one's going to employ him. His entire profession is staked on his reputation. So he's not going to tamper any kind of document. He's not going to write something that was not written originally. And he's not going to add anything. So don't go to the sofer. So who do you turn to? If you want to be unscrupulous and if you want to tamper with the document, go to the witnesses. Go to the Edim. Or go to somebody, meaning anyone but the sofer himself. So basically, the tampering is going to be done by somebody who is quote-unquote unprofessional. And so therefore, when gauging the height of these two lines, you don't gauge it based on the height of the sofer, you gauge it based on the height of what the witnesses sign. Now, obviously, that this would turn into a kula, would turn into a leniency, because that means that they were talking now about wider lines. Not the lines of a sofer, but the lines of witnesses. Vikama, Am Rav Yitzchak Bar Elazar Kagon Lecha Lecha Zeh Agabei Zeh. So now the Gemara says, let's put this into a practical example. So how much space are we talking about? We're talking about the amount of space where the word Lecha is written on top of the word Lecha. Now the word Lecha, by definition, has a lamed where the head goes above the line, and a chaf sofis where the tail goes below the line. If it's written immediately directly above another word lecha, so you need now in terms of the difference between the two lines, not one airspace but two airspaces. Because consider, if the lecha lecha is written directly above one another, so that means now that on the word above the chaf is going down. On the word below, the lamed is going up. So you need not one, but two air spaces between the two in order to allow for such writing. Now, parenthetically, if you're a sofer, what you can do, or what you probably will do, is that knowing what you're writing and knowing how the letters come out on the document, what you'll do is you'll basically navigate the letters so that no one letter will be directly right. No one high letter will be directly below a low letter. But again, considering the fact that the tampering is done by people who are not necessarily professionals, so this is something that they don't know how to navigate. They're not that proficient, and therefore the Gemara says this is something you have to be worried about. So the Gemara says, now Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar says that we're worried about lecha lecha being written directly one over another. So it comes out now, these two lines that we're looking at, that we've been discussing yesterday and we're discussing today, so how wide or how high do these two lines have to be? Enough to write the word lecha one over the other. So again, it's a line with an airspace above, an airspace below, followed then by another line with an airspace above, an airspace below. Totaling, two lines, four airspaces. Okay. Rabbi Chiya bar Ami Amishmei De'ula Amar Kigon Lamed Milamala V'Chaf Milamata. So he says that we're worried about the Lamed going above, we're worried about the Chaf going below. Amar Kasav Shnei Shitim V'Shlosha Aviran. So, but according to Rabbi Chiya bar Ami, in the name of Ula, it is two lines, three air spaces. Why only three air spaces? Because between the two lines, we only have to account for one air space, not two. In other words, he's of the opinion, Ula's of the opinion, that even for the non-professionals, they're not going to enter into a situation where a lamed's on the lower line and the chaf sofis is directly above it in the line above. Meaning even the non-professional will know how to basically shift the words around so that you'll never have the scenario. I therefore only need one airspace between the two lines, plus an airspace above, plus the airspace below, the airspace above the higher line, the airspace below the lower line, coming out to a total of two lines and three airspaces. And then the Gemara brings a third opinion on this matter, Rabbi Abba Amar Kigon Baruch Ben Levi Bishita Achas. So writing the words Baruch Ben Levi on one line is the full amount that you need, but nothing more than that. Baruch Ben Levi. Now the word Baruch Ben Levi has a Chaf Sofis and it has a Lamed. So it's got a letter going downward below the line, and we have a letter going upward, the lamed going above the line. But it's all on one line. So Kasav Shita Achas Vishne Aviran. He's of the opinion that it's one line in two airspaces. Now this third opinion, admittedly, is difficult to understand. It's difficult to hear. Because the whole starting point of our entire discussion is two lines is pasul, one line is kasher. So over here, what is he doing when he says, oh, one line, Baruch Ben Levi, it's one line in two airspaces, so that's fine. Well, why? I'm sorry, that's not fine. Meaning, that qualifies as an amount that will be disqualified. In other words, the whole starting point, starting with yesterday's daf, continuing to today's daf, is you need two lines in order to be posel. So admittedly, this third opinion is difficult to, it's difficult to read, it's difficult to hear, it's difficult to understand. Okay. Anyway, Amarav, lo shanu ela ben edim l'ksaf. Okay, so, where are we right now in the Gemara? So, as a continuation of yesterday's daf, we're basically now looking at the actual contract itself. We are talking about how if there is a gap between the ksav and the edim, it therefore is subject to tampering, which would invalidate the document. Okay. We have learned together, since yesterday's daf, that a two-line space between the ksav and the edim is going to be posel, and the Gemara now very specifically is looking at those two lines, analyzing. And what we have concluded so far today is that those two lines are going to include airspace. How much airspace, subject to a debate? The halacha takes that middle viewpoint, which it's two lines and three airspaces, meaning only a one gap space between the line above and the line below, and no one's going to put a chaf sofis directly above the lamed. Fine. And we've also concluded that when we're talking about the handwriting, we're talking about the handwriting of the edim, not of the sofer. People will not go to a sofer for tampering. He's got his reputation to worry about, so the person will go to the aid in order for a little bit of contract tampering. And so therefore, it's the width of the witness assigning that of the sofer. Okay, that's what we've gone so far.
I don't understand. Above the signature of the edim, you have the content of the shtar, right? So measure the lines, how wide are those lines, and then you know what two lines, what the space of two lines.
Right.
So what's the, I don't understand the whole gemara here to figure out how wide it should be.
The handwriting of the signatures are not the same as the sofer.
So
it's interesting that they don't use the standard measurement, right? One finger breadth.
Right. Oh, it's a subjective, subjective nature of the handwriting of the person.
Is two lines. That's it.
Okay.
People write the signature, they have a bigger signature than the sofer.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's what the Gemara. That's what the Gemara is thinking. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara, we're halfway down on Kuf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Loshano Ella Bein Eidim Liksav. So, this entire discussion that we have in terms of how wide a gap and what's going to disqualify, that's when we're talking about the gap between the ksav, that's the text of the document, and the signature of the witnesses. Fine. Aval bein edim la'ashrata afilu tuvana mikasher. However, when we're looking at the distance between the witnesses and the ashrata, and again, let's just review, this is a point we've gone over a number of times, but obviously when we're talking about contract law, we need to know this is important. It's critical. I take us back to the second parak of Ksuvos. That's a long time ago in Daf Yomi. But the second parak of Ksuvos details and goes through in depth this idea of kiyum shtaros, of certification of a document. Meaning that if I have a document that I wrote up or I have the sofer write it up, and I have two witnesses sign min haTorah, that's good. Meaning that is a document. We have the ksav, we have the signatures on the bottom, and we're done. And so that means now if I go to court and I say to court, okay, he owes me money and here's the document, and with the document, with the two signatures, and okay, well, let's go forward. Meaning that's good. And the Chachamim wanted to put an extra measure of security to know that this is a reliable, faithful document. What did they do? So they go, there's a process now that's added. It's an extra layer of protection, an extra layer of security, and it's called Kiyum HaShtar. Kiyum HaShtar is now that I have to take this document with the two signatures and I have to go to the Beis Din, and I'm going to have the Beis Din certify that this is a good document. Well, what are they going to do? So, as we've gone over a number of times, but let's go over it again. They're going to do one of three things. One is that they're going to go to the two signatures who actually signed on the document. They're going to bring them into court and they're going to say, are those your signatures? They're going to say yes. That's all you need. Now the Beis Din themselves are going to stamp the document. It's like a notary in our country. They're going to stamp the document. Now, I don't actually mean that there's a stamp, but what I mean by stamping the document is that below the signatures, they're going to write a small little note saying, we, the Beis Din, have certified that these signatures are good signatures, right? The witness is actually testified that these are their signatures, and we, the Beis Din, therefore, are now certifying the document, and the Beis Din themselves are going to be signing below the signatures of the witness. That's one way to do Kiyum HaShtar. Another way to do Kiyum HaShtar is not to have the original two witnesses testify about their own signature, but if you could have two other Kasher Edim testifying about the signatures, meaning they know their signatures, right? And so, does that look like the signature of so-and-so, and if you have two witnesses saying, yeah, that looks like the witnesses of so-and-so, so that's a second way to be Mekayim Shtar. And of course, there's a third way to be Mekayim Shtar, and that is that if I have an already certified document with these signatures on the document, and I just simply hold up the two documents side by side, does it look like a match? Yes, it looks like a match. So then Beis Din is going to certify this document as well. So either the original witnesses or two other witnesses or a match with an already certified document. Three different ways to be Mekayim HaShtar. And then what Beis Din does, as I just described, is that they're going to be putting their signatures on the bottom. Below the Chasim HaSa'idim, below the signatures of the witnesses. And so now the Gemara, in its detailed discussion of contract law, is going to be discussing, what about the gap between the Ashrata, between the stamp of the Beis Din, and the witnesses? So here Rav introduces us to a kula, to a tremendous leniency, and that is that here a gap that's even bigger than two lines is allowable. That's a kula, obviously. So, bein edim la'ashrata afilu tuva nami kasha maishna. And the Gemara asked a question, which is a pretty obvious question. Probably we're all thinking it. Maishna bein edim l'ksav duma mezayv v'kasav my debaye v'chasima sahadi bein edim, I'm sorry, v'chasima Sahadi bein Adam la Ashrata Nami Mizayef Vikasav Maidabai Vikhasima Sahade. So the Gemara says, wait one second. We have spent all of yesterday and half of today discussing that if there's a two-line gap between the text and the witnesses, so then we're open to ziyuf. Somebody's going to come in and, well, when I say somebody, I mean the person who's owed the money, to his advantage, is going to come in, perhaps, if he is not scrupulous, and he's going to add text. And so the Gemara says, so I don't understand. So if I have the signatures, and below that I have the kiyum, and the gap that exists between the two is a wide gap, so shouldn't be we worried about the same thing, that someone's going to go in and write something below that? So the Gemara says, dimitayetle. So the Gemara says like this. Well, when Rav says that a wide gap between the witnesses and the Ashrata is allowable, and it's even more than two lines, what Rav meant was not that there's going to be blank space between the two, because you are right. If there's blank space left between the witnesses and the Ashrata, so then somebody can tamper. What I mean is that what you'll do is you'll fill in that blank space with ink. And so therefore, people will know that there's nothing to, you can't write between the witnesses and the Ashrata, because we filled it in with ink. So Ihachi ben Adam Lashar Nami Mitaitle. So the Gemara says, well, really? So if ink blots are going to be our solution between a wide gap between the witnesses signing and the Ashrata, so the Gemara says, so why don't we do the same thing between the Ksav and the Adam? Meaning if there's a two line gap between the Ksav and the Adim, so why not fill it in with ink, and that will solve the problem over there. Amrei, the Gemara says no, because people will say, Sahade atyutahu dechasime, dechasime. Gemara says, well, let's consider that, let's say I have a contract with the Ksav and the Adim below, and the Adim have signed greater than two lines below, which is no good. But then we said, okay, well, you know what? Well, so to solve the problem, to make the contract now tamper-proof, I'll just fill in the gap with some ink. The Gemara says it's still not going to be good, because let's consider. Now, a week from now, a month from now, a year from now, we're looking at the contract. So what do we see? Text, an ink blot, and witnesses signing. And the ink blot is covering more than an area of two lines. So now, as we're looking back on the shtar, we're going to say to ourselves, well, that's interesting. I wonder, is ink blot covering something? Meaning, maybe there was additional writing over there, and the purpose of the ink blot is to cover something up. Meaning, maybe a condition, maybe an extra obligation, and remember, it's more than two lines. So the Gemara says, the reason why the ink blot is not going to be a good solution for a lengthy gap between the Ksav and the Adim is because, in retrospect, we may look at the ink blot and then wonder, maybe that ink blot is covering something. So the Gemara says, "Bein Adim LaAshrata Nami." So the Gemara says, "If you're right, so why aren't we worried about the same consideration between the signatures and the base and certification, the Ashrata? Where if we're going to fill in that long gap with an ink blot, so the Gemara says, maybe we're worried about somebody having written something over there, and the ink blot is just there to cover it up. So Amri, the Gemara says, no." I am not worried about that. Let me just finish the sentence. Amri, the Gemara says, I'm not worried about that. Be dina atiyuta hu dechasime. Be dina atiyuta lo chasime. So the Gemara says, well, it's just simply not a concern. Beis Din doesn't do that. Beis Din will not certify something based on a ink blot that exists between the witnesses and their ashrata. Now, why not? So I'll read the words of the Rashbam. So Beit Din Atiyuta Ein Darkam Lachtom. It's just not normal. In other words, it's unusual that there's going to be additional writing that exists between the witnesses and the Beis Din certification. And so therefore, if there's a long gap, and we're worried about people looking at that long gap, perhaps the unscrupulous person is going to write something in, fill it in with an ink blot. The Gemara says, and generally speaking, no one was writing there to begin with, right? In darkam lachtam, ava edim, hakol mitzuim lachtam v'afilo ame arz v'asi lechasimas lemechtem atiyusa. Atiyuta, I should say. But when it comes to the witnesses, so again, who's signing? So again, anyone could sign. Meaning, all you have to be is just simply a kasher egg. You don't have to be professional. You don't have to have a great handwriting, a great signature. And the Gemara says, and therefore, we're concerned about this ink blot having either covered something up, maybe the witness is signing directly on the ink blot, etc., etc. Okay, yes.
Why should anything written below the signature
right
be anything? I mean, we just said the shita
achorner,
right. We don't learn.
Right.
That's the end of the shita.
Okay, fine. So, okay, good. Now, again, like I mentioned yesterday, and I'm going to mention again today. So, in other words, in order for us to make the contract tamper-proof, we have to think like a thief. Meaning, basically, you have to think now, what are the ways to beat the system? We have to anticipate, we have to think about that. I mean, I say we, meaning the Chachamim, and therefore they have to create a document that is as tamper-proof as possible. And, okay, so I agree with you, meaning writing after the witness is signed, so, right, that's usually now the end of the document, there's no additional text that's added. But the Gemara says, but let's consider now the following. Okay, I have now a document where I have ksav, I have the actual text, I have witnesses, let's say they're proximate to the text, so that's good. And now I have a long gap that exists between the signatures and the chasima sa'idim. I'm sorry, and the henpek, and the ashrata, the certification. So the Gemara says, and to make sure that nothing is written over there, we'll fill it in with ink. We'll throw an ink blot over there. Gemara says, that's wonderful. Gemara says, it's still not wonderful, because, again, I have to think about somebody who would like to tamper with such a document. I have basically now the note of Beis Din, right? Beis Din now has certified this document. And if I look above it, blank space. And even if it's filled in with ink. But basically, it's a blank space. So the Gemara says, Lechush Dilma Gais Le Le'ela, Umachik Le Letiuta, Vikasa Mai Dabai, Umachtam Sahade. So the Amar of Ashi Abahu Ve'edav Alamacha Kasher. And the Gemara says, now, here's what a person can do, and it's really good. And by good, I mean bad. but good meaning smart. And then that is that if I have now this really long space between the witness assigning and the Ashrata and the certification of Beis Din, so here's what I'll do. I'll go to the document, and I'll simply cut right below the witness assigning. And so now what do I have? I have a blank certified document. Beis Din now has placed its stamp on the bottom of this document, and above it I have at least two lines to work with, could be more, in which now I can write whatever I want, have the witnesses sign, and the Gemara says, and now we have basically exposed and opened ourselves to this kind of possibility. Okay. I have now, we have learned together that the opinion of Rav is that I can have a long gap space between the witnesses and Beis Din certification. Good. So the Gemara says, and we'll fill it in with ink in order to make sure that nothing was written in between. Gemara says, but even if that's true, what I'm now going to do is I'm going to cut this document right below the witness's signature. And so now I have a small piece of paper with, on the very bottom, the certification of Beis Din, saying that this is an approved document.
You got rid of the Ashrata also.
I didn't know. No, the Ashrata was below it.
Okay.
It's text, signatures, and the Ashrata on the bottom.
Okay, so
and according to Rav, the signatures and the Ashrata don't have to be next to one another. There could be a wide gap.
Right.
So now I'm cutting right below the signature.
So you get rid of Ashrata.
Good. And now here's what I'll do. I will now, I know there's an ink blot, but the Gemara says, but that's fine, I'll just erase the ink blot, no problem. I'll erase the ink blot, and then I'm going to be writing now, it's an entirely fictitious document. I'm going to write that Hedy owes me $1 million. I'll have two witnesses, obviously, not honest people, signing on it. And all this is wonderful because I have the Ashrata on the bottom.
Oh, separate.
Yeah. I'm going to make a totally new document.
From that.
Right, correct.
So what happened to Ashrata for the first one?
No,
the top one is Ashrata.
Well, no. In other words,
you created two documents.
Right. In other words,
the bottom document is
going to... The first document I'm going to throw out. In other words, the top document I'll throw out.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Right. I'm just using your authorization on the bottom. Now, what about the fact that it had an ink blot and I erased it? So the Gemara says on the bottom line, I read it, but I'm going to read it again. Amar Rav Shtar HaBahu Ve'edav Al HaMachah Kasher. If I have a document where the entire document is on a paper that was clearly erased, as long as the entire paper was erased, that's fine. Right? Remember, we already discussed a couple of days ago. An erasure here, an erasure there, that speaks to tampering. And that's no good. Unless on the bottom of the document you had a keyum. You had a note saying that I erased this point over here and I erased this point over here. Fine. But in other words, small little erasures here and there, that's no good, generally. But if the entire page was basically erased over, now remember, back then, like paper was at a premium, meaning paper was reused. Right? They were the original recyclers of paper. Mm-hmm. So if I have the entire area erased, the Gemara says, according to Rav, that's kosher. So now if that's true, so aren't we basically, according to you, Rav, opening up another possibility for tampering? You now, like I just described, cut below the witness's signature, have now a clear area of room to write with certification on the bottom, erasing blot, write whatever you'd like to write. Have two, obviously, right, unfaithful people signing on the document, aren't you exposing yourself to this kind of corruption? Top now of the Amud Beis. Hanich l'Rav Kahana demasin l'mishmei d'shmul shapir. So the Gemara says, well, that statement that we just learned together, that you can write on erased paper. So if you learn that not in Rav's name, but rather in Shmuel's name, so then we're fine. Because then you can make the argument that Rav doesn't agree. And Rav won't allow you to write on erased paper. Fine. But the Gemara says, El Rav Tivyumin Damasin La Mishmei Darav Ma'ikal Amemar. But some are of the opinion that the allowance of writing on erased paper belongs to Rav. And if it belongs to Rav, so then we are in a position where I just got done describing. Where I'm, according to Rav, you're allowed to write a document on erased paper. And if by leaving this really long gap between the witnesses and the certification, I'll do exactly what we just described. Cut right below the signatures, erase, and write an entirely new document using the certification that you have on the bottom. So the Gemara's response is, Kasavar kol ki agavne imekaymen oso, min ha-ashrata shabo, ela min ha-edim shabo. So the Gemara says, in such a situation, I do not certify the document based on the ashrata, but rather from the edim. Meaning, that if I have a document where clearly the paper was erased and they were writing on the ksav, I'm sorry, on the erased portion, so then when you bring in this to Beis Din and they see erased paper, certification on the bottom, so Beis Din's going to say, okay, all it checks out, but we're not going to allow this certification to apply to this document. In other words, if you want this document to be good, you must bring in the witnesses so that we will ratify the document based on the witnesses, not on the certification. Okay. It probably bothers you, and Tosas points this out over here. According to this opinion of Rav, that you're allowed to write on erased paper, right? So...
But you do make a declaration that this was erased and rewritten. You're supposed to do that.
Right. But I'm sorry. But in other words, but if you're erasing the entire page, so then according to Rav, you're allowed to write in such a document.
Your chapter is not written. Correct.
So perhaps it bothers you. So if that's true, so then why not just take any document, just simply erase the entire document, and write whatever you'd like to write, meaning this opinion that you're allowed to write on erased paper, doesn't it open itself up to just very simple and basic tampering? So Tosos over here is bothered by the question. Small Tosos over here, and Tosos is bothered by the question. Tosos has the following yesod, and that is, I'll read it inside. It's the small Tosos on the bottom, on the top of Kuf Samachim Amad Beis. So Kasha Dulidide Mi Nicha Imken Kolshtar. Mikuyam, any certified document, yam chakeno, you'll just simply erase the entire text of the document and rewrite whatever you'd like to rewrite. V'yeshlam adahalokash kulehai. So Tosfos says, and maybe you can make the following assertion, and he does. He does make the following assertion, which is, kevan shahaya kasa mitchila lo yachol amachko shalo yu nikarma osios. Look, if you wrote something down and you erase it, even in your erasing, it's going to be somewhat still evident that what you did is that there was previous text, and I erased previous text. Avamachak d'tiyuta einu nikar. But over here, we're talking about a page that had an inkblot on it. A page that had an inkblot on it, and I erased it, so clearly it was erased, but it also will be clear that there was no pre-existing text on the page. Okay, now later on the Gemara is going to suggest otherwise, but Tosafot says that perhaps you can make such a distinction about erasing text versus erasing an ink blot. Anyway, let's finish the daf today. The Gemara now, we are on Kuf Samachim Amud Beis, and the Gemara for most of today's daf introduces us to Rav's opinion, which is the distance between the Ksav and the Edim cannot be two lines or wider. And again, we went into even more detail today regarding the length of the two lines. So, but the distance between the Edom and the Kiyum Shtar and the Basin certification can be greater than two lines. That's Rav's opinion. What about the fact that now it opens and exposes us to tampering? So the Gemara spent a lot of time resolving that issue. Now the Gemara treats us to the opinion of Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara now continuing with the Gemara. So Rav Yochanan Amar Lo Shano Allah Bein Edom Laksav Aval Bein Edom LaHashrata Afilu Shita Achas Pasol. Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that just the opposite, that I'm going to be more machmir when it comes to the distance between the witness assigning and basin certification. I don't think, says Rav Yochanan, that there can even be a one line gap between the two. Maishna bein edim lasharta dama guys leilai v'kasav huve edav v'shita achas v'kasav v'shtar haba huve edav v'shita achas kasher. So the Gemara says, why should that be? Because what again the person will do is if there is a gap of two lines between or even one line, I should say, between the certification and the witnesses. So again, what the person will do is he'll cut the document right below the witnesses, and basically he'll write a contract. Now, this is just an interesting point. What is the maximum? How big does the contract have to be?
12 lines.
Get is typically 12 lines. But if I'm just writing a simple IOU note, how big does it have to be? So Rav Yochanan now is teaching us that it could be all of one line. And when I say all of one line, that includes both text and signatures of the witnesses. Now I know, signatures of the witnesses, there are two witnesses. Generally speaking, we have one on top of another. But in other words, in terms of how much you actually need, one line is all you need. A simple, all right, I owe you $1,000, then on that very same line, and I'll have one witness sign, I'll have another witness sign. So Rav Yochanan says, if I have a document where the henpek, the certification of the Beis Din is one or two or even one line below the signatures, so then he'll just cut right below the signatures and create an entirely new document. So the Gemara says, "Dilma guys leilav v'kasav huve edav b'shita achas v'kasavar shtar haba huve edav b'shita achas kasher." So yahachi bein edim l'ksav nami dilma guys leilav v'kasav my dabai v'chasim asahadeh. So the Gemara says, Rav Yochanan, if you are right, meaning obviously, meaning it's his opinion, so he clearly subscribes to this, so then I don't understand. We spent all of yesterday and a good part of today talking about the gap between the Ksav and the Edom. According to you, Rav Yochanan, what do we say? Two lines not good, but one line is okay. One line's okay? No, it shouldn't be okay. If there's a one-line gap between a Shtar, the Ksav, and the Edom, so let's do the same thing over here. Let's cut out the entire Ksav, right below the Ksav, and then, with one line, that's all I need in order to create an entirely new document. So the Gemara says, because of my...
Yeah, but if each document requires two lines, and then Kam Shtar, right, then when it cuts, then we would have...
Right, but the Gemara seemingly doesn't require two lines. on the very top. So the Gemara says, "Because of my debay v'chasim asade." So the Gemara says, "Kasar v'shtar habahu b'shita achas ve'eda b'shita acheres pasol." So the Gemara says, and this is really minutia, meaning this is like we are like in the real details of contract law. The Gemara says, "Well, Rav Yochanan will allow a one-line document, but when we say one-line document, meaning everything contained in the one line, the IOU, the witness number one, witness number two, but." A two-line document where line number one is the ksav, and line number two are the witnesses. So the Gemara says, Rav Yochanan says, that's really suspicious. And because that's so suspicious, so Rav Yochanan will not allow that. So the Gemara says, well, again, if we're thinking like the thief, so the Gemara says, so why don't we do the following? Let's cut out the ksav. Remember, we had a one-line gap between the ksav and the edim, so let's cut it out. In that one line, let's write IOU, and in that one line, we'll also have witnesses signing, and then we'll have witnesses signing below that as well. And as far as the question, why do you have so many witnesses signing? What do you mean, why do I have so many witnesses signing? The more the better. Meaning, two is just the base minimum. I wanted more than two. So I wrote a one-line document, which according to you, Rav Yochanan, is fine. And in that one line, I had the IOU, plus I had the two signatures. And the fact that I have two signatures below that, I just wanted more. So the Gemara says, "Kasav kol ki aygavna in mekayim naso mina edim shalamata ela mina edim shalamala." So the Gemara says, "Well, if we have such a document looking like this, once again, it's slightly suspicious. A one-line document with the edim on that line, but then I have more edim below it." So again, Rav Yochanan is saying that such a document is suspicious. I won't throw it out. I won't throw it out of hand. Out of the Beis Din, but if you want to certify this document, why don't you bring in those two witnesses who signed along the actual ksav itself? Let's ratify the document based on their signatures. Now remember, those were the lying edim. Now, yes, of course it's true, they may come into court and they may falsify and say, look, yeah, we signed on it, yeah, it was good. But in other words, by bringing them into the court, hopefully, probably, we'll learn that they were lying and they were not speaking the truth. Okay, a quick recap of the daf, and with that we conclude. Okay, so once again, the Gemara started off with a discussion of the gap that exists between the ksav and the edim. So we know that two lines is possible; anything less than two lines is fine. So two points that we started off our Gemara with today. Number one, what about the letters that go above and below the line? We call the airspace. So the Gemara says that, yes, we have to take that into account as well. And so therefore, it's two lines, and I'm going to go with the middle shita, the accepted shita, and three air spaces because of the possibility of letters going below and above the line. What about the whose handwriting we're looking at in terms of gauging the height of the line? The handwriting of the witness is not the sofer. The sofer is not going to be adding additional text after the signature is already signed. His entire reputation is at stake. And then finally, we talked about a gap between the witnesses and the certification of the Beis Din, where Beis Din will be certifying on the bottom, notarizing that this is a good document. So can there be a gap between the signatures and the certification of the Beis Din? And to that, we had two basic opinions in today's daf, Rav and Rav Yochanan. Rav, which was on the Amud Aleph, going into the Amud Beis, says that there could be a really wide gap between the two. What about we're worried about tampering? Throw an ink blot in there, and the Gemara then went to discuss what about erasing the ink blot, etc., etc. But that's Rav's opinion. Rav Yochanan is of the opinion, no, that in terms of the Beis Din certifying the document, they must certify it directly below the witnesses. And he does not even allow a one-line gap between the witnesses and Beis Din certification. The notary note has to be put directly below the witnesses' certification. Otherwise, Rav Yochanan says that I'm worried about tampering because you can cut right below the signatures and have people writing. And this fits into Rav Yochanan's general shita, which is that a contract does not need to be more than one line. A one-line contract would be sufficient, but that's only when everything's in that one line, both the note of indebtedness and the signatures. Okay. Stop here. Tomorrow we pick it up.